think we're going to have fun because there's four of us in the studios and there's two gray-haired guys and then we have two whippersnappers.
Yeah, but Mark, did you happen to look at Eric? He's turning gray, too. I think you're getting to him.
Oh, he is. He is. We need to talk him into coloring his hair.
What color do you like?
Hey, you have to remember if you're going to color your hair, you got to do your eyebrows, too, and the hair in your ears. Otherwise, everybody can tell.
Yeah.
You know? I'm thinking either you go to brown or you go to silver. One or the other. Now, they don't call it silver anymore. They call it chrome. It's chrome.
I thought what you and I had was chrome when nothing.
Exactly. No, that's that could be chrome, too. That could be chrome, too.
It's called a ball cap.
Yeah, it's called the ball cap. That's exactly right. So we got all of these guys are from Kurt's Auto, I-17 and Bell. There's Kurt to my left, and he's the boss. Then we got Eric, and that's what Eric says, and that's what Jeff says. But Eric is his son, and God bless you, Kurt. I usually say that to the son, but I'm saying it to you. And you want to say anything? You want to say anything that's special?
Not at this point, unless you want to wish Mom a happy Mother's Day.
Oh, you can? Oh,
yeah.
You can.
Yeah,
that
works.
Yeah. No. What's your mother's name?
Well, my mother?
Yeah.
Well, my mother and my stepmother.
Okay. Wish them
my
both.
My mother-in-law.
Okay. Wish them both.
Well, Mom is Alice.
Okay.
She lives up in Paulden.
Okay.
And mother-in-law is Kathy. You know her.
Okay, yeah.
And they're both Happy Mother's Day.
Okay. All right. That's nice of you. He's just brown-nosing his way to the...
Yeah, he's trying to make me look bad, Mark.
Exactly. I know what he's saying. Eric, you have to work with him every day, and you actually work kind of next to him and over him. And what's it like?
Eric's a great guy.
Just say hell. That's good.
Eric is so much easier to get along with than the older guys.
I told you, Mark.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. It is. Well, and you're the service manager, service writer, am I right? You handle the phone calls. There is somebody, a very nice young lady, by the way, because I called the other day.
That is actually, we just... put on my youngest daughter.
Okay.
I learned from you. I figured we'd get somebody to corral these guys.
And that's what Andy does.
Andy does that, so I'm hoping Anna can take care of it.
Okay. So Anna was really nice, and I said, one of the two clowns called me, and she says, oh, Eric and Jeff? I said, one of them called me. But no, she was really polite.
Yeah.
Very professional, too. Very professional. So, and then Eric works in the shop, and he's kind of like the lead tech or the helper, the guider. He's the senior guy. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. And he's the one that plays practical jokes by, you know, asking them to come over here and hold this spark plug, but they don't know it's attached to the engine, and then he starts it. He's the honorary one.
That's not true.
Okay. It's Jeff. Jeff is the honorary
one? Yeah, we had a truck that had train horns in, and Jeff found them. So he told Eric, he says, would you slide under? We got a vibration. And just as Eric slid under, they blasted them horns. It almost killed him. They thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, he had to go change his pants. No, that's the fun of it. That's the fun of it. That's the fun of, you know, it's just a bunch of guys in the shop. That's the fun of it. But you have to be careful though, Eric, because now that you're on, Jeff, now that you're on top of him, you got him good. Then there's a good chance he's going to turn around and try to switch the tables.
Yeah, you always have the cars with the blown head gaskets that's pumping compression out the cooling system.
Uh-huh.
You get the new guys, and you say, hey, have you ever seen sparks in a radiator? Put your eye real close to the cap.
Yeah.
When you crank it, it washes their eyeball out. It's really entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't do that to somebody who's significantly bigger than you are. You get him in on the joke as well. 602-508-0960. You've been a master tech?
Yes, sir.
And how many years have you been a master tech? How many years have you been ASE certified?
That's too hard to count.
Okay. Yeah, 20, 25, I don't know.
That's what I think. I think you and I are about the same age, so
yeah,
it's going to be 25 to 30.
Yeah, to be exact, Mark, you're 1 month older than I am,
okay.
In case you were wondering.
No, I didn't know that, and I don't really care. This isn't a matter of age. This is a matter of experience. It's you and I against the whippersnappers.
Right, and I done my first job for hire at 17 years old, and at 63, you can do the math.
Yeah, and I worked at Ken's Broadway Shell at Broadway and Pre. priest when I was 14 years old. I lied about my age.
Yeah.
And I still have a piece of paper that he gave me a nickel an hour raise for merit. For merit. And that's just after I told him I was leaving. And I worked from a gas tank, and we were at 27, 29, and 31. This is right after the mid-grade came out. And I went there, and I worked from 3 to midnight, and I ran the 3 to midnight shift. Then I went to school at 9 o'clock, got off at noon, and went back at 3.
Yeah.
So, but that's where we got our starts.
Yeah.
And under the very best of conditions. We know where these guys got their start, at high school and stuff like that, and working on lawn mowers and stuff like that. But you've been a master tech for a long time. How about you, Eric?
I would probably say I got my first cert shortly after I was started, and then master within a year or something. So I've been 16 years or something.
Okay. All right. And Jeff?
We actually certified together, so it's been 15 years.
Okay. And so it's important to understand that the recertification, first of all, to be a master tech, there's 8 automotive tests.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got front end, which includes suspension. We've got heating and cooling. We've got engine, we've got transmission, we've got gearboxes, we have electronic fuel injection or electronics. There's going to be 8 tests, and I don't know all of them. So you take the 8 tests and you're a master, but you have to recertify every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to take the same test.
Yep.
And when you take the tests, I don't know, do you guys have any idea, do you remember how long it takes you to take all 8 tests? I think it's 4 hours or three or four.
It's about a half hour a test or so.
So it's a long time, and it's not something that's easy to pass because they change the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real high security, too. They search you when you come in
to
make sure you don't have anything to cheat the test. And they make you put everything in a locker, and you're not allowed to talk to anybody. So it's real high security. It's not like anybody's going to be able to write on the back of their eyelids and stuff. 602-508-0960, and we'll take them. And have you got a caller, Gil?
Yes, Lee.
Lee, good morning to you. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I have a Mercedes where the air that's coming out is not cool anymore. And so I had to deal with a dealer in Connecticut when I was up there. I called him. I said, what do I do? He said, just go to a shop that you know you can trust out there. I said, well, okay. Because it should be a simple thing like they'd add Freon, or he said you could get ready to remortgage the house if you get someone that wants to build a sale. So,
okay.
I'm looking for. But.
So, why didn't they want to do it? Why did they pass on the? This is a Mercedes dealer. Why did they pass?
No, not a dealer, just a shop in Connecticut where I live.
Okay, all right.
I'm out here now in Sun City.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, I think
what
that's...
What he said to me, he said, just talk to people and let people because they can go from a...
Okay.
To, you know, he said, remortgage the house.
Okay, all right.
Is he got a new Mercedes with the new Freon? Is that why he's...
I don't know. What year's your car?
01.
Okay, no, it's a 12. I don't understand why you're mortgaging your house and all that kind of stuff. When was the last time you had it serviced?
No, that was just what he said. He was saying it can go from either they add Freon or the other starts to.
I know, but I'm asking you, how long has it been since you've had it serviced? That's one of the questions that's going to be necessary you answer in order for us to help you here.
Oh, well, serviced. Probably 3 months.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, it should be easily done by any shop. I mean,
I don't understand.
It's a Freon check level or a compressor, you know, signal or something. I mean, it doesn't seem like it should be anything that should be that big a deal.
Warm, though, is different than hot. You know? And so warm indicates he's got something. It's more than likely he has something. I think the possibility exists that he has a leak. But you don't know till you get it into the shop. So, Lee, I think the first step is to just add some dye.
Yeah.
Bring it up to snuff, right? And I'm going to ask you, when we're done here, what it's going to cost in parameters-wise. So you bring it in, you add some dye, you add a little bit of Freon, you get it kind of cold, and then you're going to say, bring it back how long after you do the dye?
Usually I say it when you notice a temperature change on the hot part of the afternoon.
Okay. Okay. So it might be a day or two or three. It could be a week or it could be a month, just depending on the size of the leak. So when you see a temperature change on a good hot day, then bring it back. What color are we likely to find when we put on our funky yellow glasses and we're looking for the residue of the dye that will hopefully tell us where the leak's at?
It'd be green.
Okay, and it could be pink, could be orange, could be yellow. There's a lot of different dyes out there. But I would imagine that Eric likes pink. And so that's the reason why I was guessing it was going to be pink. So you put dye in it.
So where can I go to Eric then? Huh?
Well, what part of town do you live in?
Sun City.
Okay. Well, you can go. I'll give you a couple of different shops. Up in Sun City, you have Auto Dynamics. And then you also have, you can call S&S Tire. I think they do air conditioning. But you can go to I-17 and Bell and go to Kurt's and see Eric and Jeff there and Kurt there. And Jeff, you're the one that does the money end of it, so give me some parameters. Not knowing how much Freon he takes, not knowing, you know, all the other questions, give me some parameters.
And so first thing I'd say is let's do a basic testing on it.
Okay.
Mechanical.
Okay.
You can do the mechanical test. I figure most shops be anywhere from 50 to 75 bucks or so.
Okay.
If it's electrical,
okay,
like control side mode, temperature's acting up on you.
Okay, and what you mean by electrical is we don't have a compressor activation. We're not running the compressor, so we've got a low-pressure switch, a high-pressure switch. We've got something malfunction there that's doing that. So you're looking at, let's look at the fundamentals first. Let's look for a compressor operation. You're going to reach down and grab one of the two pipes off the compressor. What do you expect them to be? One is going to be?
One's going to, you're going to let go really fast.
Okay, it's going to be hot.
It should be.
All right.
And the other one should be fairly cold.
Okay. And cold means we got a compressor activation.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
Okay. So at that point, we know that we got everything working. And we hope, in his case, it is. So then at that point, what are you going to do?
At that point, you're going to see whether you got the temperature blending properly, because if he's got the proper level, it's cooling in the evaporator.
Okay.
Which is, pulls the cool air and everything. So that means we're getting too much heat to it.
Okay. And so we got this door underneath the dash that gives us all hot, all cold, or in between. And we want to make sure that we don't have an in between where we get half and half. Okay? Isn't that right?
That's right.
Okay. So that's how we can do that. So at that point, we add dye. We send him on his way. And so I'm thinking he's going to be somewhere in the vicinity after we do all that checks, $100, $150.
Roughly.
Okay. Now, he comes back. We're going to put on our funky glasses and look for the leak.
Yep.
And then we're going to bid the leak. Now, do you have the electronic dipstick, the fancy new machines where you can pull it out and figure out how many ounces it's got, stuff like that?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's something we've never had before. Kurt and I have never had that before. So we just flew by the seat of our pants.
Yeah,
when we
use side glasses and bubbles.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But with the new electronic stuff, we look at the tag on the car, and it says, let's just pretend for easy math, okay? Give me a break here. It's got 20 ounces.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we suck it completely out, and it has 12. So we clean the 12, take the metal out of it, take the moisture out of it, and we save it in our back pocket. And so then what we do is we fix the leak.
Yep.
So now we're going to put his 12 back in, and we're going to add another 18.
Yep. 18.
Okay, I'm just testing you.
Mark.
Yeah. So we're doing ounces, and so we're going to bring him back up to 20 ounces.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I can tell you unequivocally that machine's made me look like a hero 100 times over, because they'll come in, and you'll find out they're 7 or 8. Kurt. It's true that we never had a chance when we serviced air in the old days.
Yeah, but we've done a better job than them. So,
but they have this electronic dipstick now. They put it back in, and 100% of the people that we've serviced and put exactly what it was in has called us and said it's all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
And before, when we just flew by the seat of our pants, you could get 10 guys to look at the same car, and every one of them put a different Freon in it.
Mm-hmm,
but
sure.
That new electronic dipstick makes us look heroes.
Yep.
It's also about $8,000, but never mind that.
It's only money.
Yeah, it's only money. All right, when we come back, we're going to take calls, and if you want to join us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kurt's Auto. Kurt's here. Jeff here. And unfortunately, they checked out. Eric from the Insane Asylum, and he's here too, and we'll be back in a minute. Okay, let's turn on all the microphones, Mark, and we're going to take calls in just a minute, but with Kurt from Kurt's Auto, Eric from Kurt's Auto, and Jeff from Kurt's Auto, and Mark Salem, we're all here together. Kurt's is at I-17 and Bell, and we needed to recap for Lee. Lee, there's three shops in your general area. There's Auto Dynamics, and he's on 99th and Grand. We have S&S Tire. He's on 91st and Grand. And then Kurtz is at I-17 and Bell. On everybody's available to handle your concern with your air conditioning, but it's probably going to be a two-visit. It's going to be the first time, let's get it up to snuff, check some of the basics, and send you out the door, because we really need to know how big the leak is. Mm-hmm. If everything works for him for the next 2 or 3 months, then there's really no harm, no foul here, right?
Correct.
Right.
So we're going to leave it alone, because it's easier to service this once a year than it is to go in and start hunting down a whole bunch of leak, or a small leak like that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how it works. So anyway, and those are the three shops, again, Auto Dynamics, S&S Tire, and then Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. Let's go to the phones real quick. James, you're up first. How can we help you?
I'm dying here in Surprise. I got a 2012 Chevy Colorado. Started a few months ago with the blower motor working intermittently. So far, I've replaced 3 resistors, wiring harness, blower motor, checked the ground under the hood, checked the battery to body ground, and it's still just intermediate. The blower comes on only on number 2 when it wants to.
Okay. I don't see anybody raising their hands.
I thought I saw Eric raise his hand.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, does number 2 a speed you use a lot?
No. Before I had any problems, and I knew that Colorado's had issues for this years of Colorados, but just when it started working, it tends to now just not work at all. If it does work, it's on 2.
Okay.
Because if it starts working and I turn it to 1 or 3 or 4, then it just stops.
Okay, yeah. We understand.
And more than likely, you've named everything in the system except for the switch.
That's it. Yeah. All right, I want you to picture this, okay, James? You should have called us a long time ago. We'd have saved you a hell of a lot of money. But we got the blower. Okay, well, that's fine. It's okay. It's your money. But we got the blower motor over here on my right hand, and then we got the switch in the middle, and then we got the battery on my left hand. So if the blower motor is drawing excessive amps, the first place it goes through is it goes through the switch. Now, the blower motor, it has 4 speeds. Here's a test for you, Mr. Big Shot. Speeds 1. Which ones?
Which Big Shot, Mark?
I'm looking at Eric. Okay. There's 4 speeds, and there's 2 circuits that run it. Tell us which one it is.
Well, it depends which system you have. You can have an automated variable speed system.
Okay, he doesn't.
Switch.
he doesn't. He doesn't.
I know he doesn't.
Okay, he has 4 speeds.
No.
Okay, go ahead.
You've got the 2. Now you put me on the spot, and I forgot what you said.
No, it's okay. That's right. You're going to agree, because I got you flustered. 1, 2, and 3 go through the resistor, and 4 goes right to the battery.
Right.
Through a relay, typically to a battery.
Okay. And so you've got 1, 2, and 3 is the resistor and the switch, and then 4, just the switch just it hooks the blower motor straight to the battery. Now, here's what the mistake you made. You had a problem with the blower motor. And we certainly wouldn't have we would have taken an amp draw measurement from that. And we would have known that it's well past. And if I'm not mistaken, it's between 15 and 18 amps.
It's typical.
Okay. And then if we saw 20 or 30 amps, we go, okay. Everything upstream is suspect at that point.
Yeah, that's toast at all.
And so you have to say to the customer, we're going to put a blower motor in it, but you may have a switch that goes out, and it's part of this calamity, and we're not going to replace the switch for you for free. So we're going to kick you out the door because 1, 2, and 3 or 4 are working, but you may lose 1, 2, 3. And so that's going to go, or 4, and which is the high blower. But in your particular case, I agree with the whippersnappers. You just need to replace the fan switch. And when you take it out, take it apart and look at it. If it's burn up beyond belief, that was caused by the blower motor on the first time.
Yep, I am. Yes.
Okay. All righty. Well, good luck to you, James. Thank you very much. That was a great question, and us old guys won the whippersnappers. Michael, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I've got a 98 BMW Z3, and I decided to check out the AC this week. In fact, I turned it on for the first time this week. And I only use it about 10 or 12 times a year because I go out in the morning when it's cool.
Okay.
So I drove from East Mesa, downtown Phoenix, 30 miles, put my thermometer in the center vent, closed the others,
let's see, ambient temperature 94, and it went 45 degrees all the way down.
And we have a comment. Jeff?
Okay.
What do you think?
Obviously, AC's working a little bit.
Yeah. How about you?
If I got 45 out of my truck, I'd be happy.
I would, too. And how about you?
I'm happy. I'm happy
with 45. I think that my personal limit's 55. And we need to be under 55.
Yeah.
And we've had them. I mean, really and truly, Michael, it's not likely that any car is going to throw ice cubes at you. I mean, there's not anybody that's going to be down there in the 20 or the 30s. And at 45, that's a home run. That's a home run.
Good. I usually look for about 50 degrees less than outside.
Okay. And
Eric said 94 to 50 to 45. That's right there.
Right. And Jeff brings up a great point, because that is another way to look at it. What's the ambient? Because at 60 degrees, it's going to be a little colder. And at 110 or 105 degrees, it's going to be a little warmer.
Yeah.
But when we look at the spread, you were right. Mm-hmm. Jeff, I'm going to say this quietly.
You were right.
Because the spread works a little bit better than just the shooting from the hip like Eric and I did. But 45, really and truly, we're all in agreement that there's no way that you need any work. I think you're just fine.
Can I give you the return trip?
Sure.
Okay, I let it sit out in the sun for 3.5 hours, and interior temperature is 156 when I got in.
Okay.
Then I took off from downtown, and I put it on recirculate.
Okay.
Max fan, max cool.
Okay.
104 ambient.
Okay.
45 degrees all the way back.
Okay, so, yeah, we still think there's nothing wrong with it. But you know what? If you want to spend a bunch of money, Salem or Kurtz will take your money.
I've got an idea, Mark. He can just send us $50 each, and we'll advise him.
Yeah. I just don't know. If you want to spend a bunch of money, we're here to help you.
The car's never been in the shop, so I don't think I will. Yeah.
Well, first of all, we know you're lying because it's a BMW. So, all right. All right, calm down, everybody. But we're teasing you, okay? We're just teasing you. But you might have the only BMW in the world that's never been in the shop, especially in 1998. But anyway, we're happy for you, and your Z3 is perfect. And the information you gave us, we rarely get from anybody else, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We don't get the ambient and the split, and then we don't get the 150, and then we're dropping down to 40-something.
Right. Yeah.
We never get that.
No.
So
that's probably beautiful. An engineer.
Michael, here, I'm going to give you a present for that, okay? Kurtz has a free oil change for you.
and he can't bring it. It's never been in the shop.
Oh, no. We're going to have Eric change it in the parking lot.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
All right. So Kurtz has a free oil change because you have the winning car today, and I'll pay for it if Eric doesn't.
Well, you know what happened last time, Mark.
Yeah.
What? Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, guys.
When you offered to pay for it, remember Jeff sent you the bill for 55 gallons of oil and stuff?
Yeah, I'm going to fix him a little later on.
Okay.
Hey, we'll be back in a minute. Greg, you stay there. Welcome back, everybody. It's 33 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me tell you real quick about somebody, Kurt, that actually was rebuilding transmissions when you and I were pumping gas.
That would be Phil.
Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. He's been rebuilding transmissions in Phoenix since 1968. He's been at 40th Street in Washington since 1968. He knows what he's doing since 1968. He'll drive your car. He'll talk to you, but preferably not Monday mornings and Friday afternoons for obvious reasons. So if you're in Phoenix and you have a transmission problem, may I suggest to you that you take up his offer and stop by Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE. And he'll assign somebody to go drive your car if you can make it happen. That's a real important part, is if you can duplicate the symptoms, that's the great part about it. So that's Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. And let's go to the phones. Greg, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a F-350 Ford van with the Triton V10 in it.
Okay.
The 98. We just got it. It was donated to us. And we want to use it for cross-country trips. It's got 130,000 miles on it. I'm not sure if we want to bring it in and have someone check it out to see if it's something we should keep or sell.
Okay. Jeff, it's at your door, and he just asked you that question.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. And go ahead. Yes. I'm him.
Yeah. So we would definitely take a look at it. We have a basic inspection, go through a checklist of kind of hit the tops of a bunch of different systems. And
okay.
And I think for us, I'm not speaking for you, but for us, it's just really a matter. He says cross country. So all of a sudden, we're not going to peel off the 25% of bad. We're going to peel off a bigger number.
Correct.
So we're going to go into what can break you down kind of thing. So he may have some issues there that are not going to need the tow truck. So he's got a window that rolls up on the back seat area that comes. Guys, go slow.
Yeah, they need a BMW. They never go to the shop.
Oh, yeah, that's right, too. Yeah, they don't make a three-quarter or a one-ton van. But what you're looking for in my vernacular is a used car checkover.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Okay? So you're saying, I kind of want to buy this, so what's wrong with it now? Give me an estimate to fix now, and then if you can look into the future. Now, let me ask you a question. Where's the temperature gauge run on that?
Well, it's running within the middle range.
Okay, that's the goalposts, okay? Those are the goalposts. I think, Eric, we want it to run where on the gauge?
You would like it to slightly under half all the time.
Okay, but I'm going to open up that door on an F-350 to a half to three quarters.
Yeah, okay? They're pulling hard, yeah.
Right, and that's the window you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay in that window. Does it use any oil, or have you had it long enough to determine that?
Yeah, it's not burning any oil. It's not dripping anything that I can see
okay.
on the ground.
Well, you guys can argue with this. I'm of the opinion that the beginning of the end is we start puffing some blue smoke every once in a while. It starts consuming or leaking oil. And then the end of the life is close when we foul the spark plug.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Agreed?
Yeah.
And that's as we get internal pressure, Greg, then we start leaking oil. And if we have internal pressure, we're likely consuming oil. And if you don't have any of those issues, that engine's capable of going how far, whippersnappers?
We see them 250, 300.
Eric? Yeah, we see them up there. We got one in there that's almost 400.
Okay.
That we've seen.
I agree with you. It'll go 250 to 350 with no problem. And now, Eric, how many times has he been around the world at 200,000 miles?
I don't know, Mark, but you probably know because you stumped me with a question.
No.
You can't drive around the world, Mark. There's oceans in the way.
I'm going to spot you the answer, Eric. It's 25,000 miles around the girth of the Earth at the equator.
Uh-huh.
You ever take 100 miles?
Okay.
So in 200,000 miles, how many times has that van circled the world?
He's pushing 10.
Eight. I don't know where he came from.
I don't know either.
I thought I'd throw that in there to confuse him. It didn't work.
You were guessing. He'd go, yeah, 10. No, it's 8, but it's 8. And people, I use that a lot because people understand. They expect so much out of their cars, but this van's been around the world 8 times at 200,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a lot of stop and goes. He's going to need a tranny probably between 200, agreed or not?
Yeah,
I would expect so.
Okay, I'm thinking too. He's probably already had some air conditioning work at 130. So that should last him for another 75 or 80,000 miles. So I think a used car checkover is kind of what you need. I think you're going to spend $75 to $125 for that.
Mm-hmm.
You guys in agreement with that?
We're right in that bar.
Okay. And it's a kind of a thing, and you say to the shop, I want to know what's wrong now with estimates, and I want to know what I need to address, and I want you to know that I'm really using that word towable issues. If this issue is going to cause me the need of a tow truck, I want to know now. Now, in our defense, we don't have a crystal ball. Even though Chris has one, or Kurtz has one on his head.
No. We don't take your hat off, Mark.
we don't have a crystal ball, so we can't look into the future. But we certainly have the ability to give you the best idea. Our industry has ability to give you the best idea. Okay, did that get it for you, Craig?
It did. So bring it in. Just go through. Be specific about what the my purpose is, my end use is. I have them check it out, right?
Right.
I like the idea that it's got 130. You mentioned that. Mm-hmm. I like the idea you're going to do cross country with it, and I like the idea that you want them to look first at the issues that's just going to cause you the need for a tow truck.
1 minute.
And by the way, your insurance company will cover that by far cheaper than anybody else. You can turn your receipt in, and they'll take care of the receipt, and you don't have to tow it to the nearest shop, which is inevitably is the shop from the tow truck. And of course, once they get you there, then At times, I've been told they wear a mask and pull your pants down and take all your money out of your pockets. Okay? So just be careful about that, and that's why it's important for you to be able to tow it to wherever you want. So anyway, Greg, thanks very much. Hector, you stay right there. We're going to take you next, and we've got four lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And real quick, let me tell you about Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob is one of the best diagnostician present, company excluded. Bob's one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met. He does auto electrical work. He does oil changes, brake service, auto emissions, any kind of maintenance. But if you've got a car and your story starts off with this, I've had it to 20 different places and nobody can fix it, and you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, then you are best served by going to Larry Harker's Auto. Been in business since 1967. Ellen runs the front, Bob runs the back, and both of them know what to do and how to fix cars. That's Larry Harker's Auto. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Let's see where the time's at on my screen here. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to go to the phones real quick, and we're going to go to Hector like we promised. Hector, how are you?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Good, good. What can we do for you?
Okay, I have an 01 Nissan Sentra. I just got it back after getting it repaired, but they had to replace all the coils because apparently it burnt out the computer twice, which is kind of pricey. But that's all fixed, but now I've gotten it back, and when I started, I take off and it kind of stalls a little, like it pulls back. But if I start it and leave it on for about, I'd say about 20 seconds or so after letting it run, it'll drive just fine. I was kind of hoping you could give me a tidbit of information of what I should try to look for.
Okay. Can we comment on that, all the coils and computer?
Yeah, please.
Okay. And let me just do it in a really nice way. Kurt, have you ever replaced all the coils and the computer on any car?
The only one that has these troubles was, which Ford is it, Jeff?
The Escape.
The Escape has the coils
that
shorter.
Ford recommends that.
It's a Ford bulletin to do okay. that. But
all right.
That's the only one.
Other than Ford.
But Nissan, I don't ever recall anything okay. like that.
Eric?
And especially two.
Yeah. And then Jeff?
Yeah, I don't
ever
recollect anything else.
Okay, because that just screams that somebody is just replacing parts and they don't really know, they haven't diagnosed it appropriately, and then the excuse is that I had two bad computers or I had, you know, a series of coils bad and stuff like that. But let's get to the question. The question is, anybody want to chime in on why when he starts it and drives away, it dies, but if he lets it run for a few minutes, then it's fine?
The only thing that really comes to my mind is somehow he has a lack of fuel pressure, and then he hits it right at the beginning with the dip in fuel pressure, but over time it builds up and he's fine.
Okay, and that's exactly where I'm going. Hector, let me ask you this. When you start it up, when this happens, when you start it up cold, do you have to crank it a while to get it to run, or does it just hit the key and boom, it starts?
Just hit the key and it starts.
Okay, so I was thinking if he had a low oil fuel pressure when he's starting it up cold, then we'd usually see a double crank, triple crank. So I don't know the answer to that. Let's brainstorm it. An EGR that's coming on early.
I was thinking a throttle or a coolant temperature sensor maybe whacked too. He may not be getting the fuel proper.
And if it's saying it's too hot, and when it's really cold, then it's not going to turn the faucet on, because cold the computer turns the faucet on and gives you more fuel. You got any other?
Or if for some reason the hot wire on his mass airflow isn't warming properly under the first initial startup.
That's a good one.
O2 sensor heaters aren't working right, or when he gets into fuel control mode, it runs better.
Right at the startup, right?
Right at the startup.
So that's,
you could have a computer logic problem, too.
You could have
a logic problem.
A ground problem.
But we're talking about some of the stuff that usually hits check engine lights.
Yes.
Okay. This is all true.
But it only happens once during the day on the front side. So it may not have enough repetitions to set the check engine light. But would this one here is an 01 Sentra. Do you think we have serial stream data behind that 01?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So if we have serial stream data, Hector, what we're going to do is we're going to be able to watch what the heck's going on. Now, does anybody here know what kind of grams we're going to idle at?
Should be around 3.
And I was thinking 3 to 5.
Yeah.
So if we're looking in the morning when this happens and we start it up and it's either 10 or 20 or it's 1, then we've kind of got the track.
Yeah.
Because the mass airflow sensor tells the computer how much air is coming into the engine. and it feels the air coming into the engine, Hector. So the computer looks at the air and looks at the chart and then opens the gasoline faucet to match the amount of air. But if the mass airflow sensor that's supposed to feel the air is wearing three winter coats, it can't feel the air, and so the computer's not going to open up the throttle. Open up the faucet, I should say. Agreed?
Right.
Correct.
Okay. And so what we're talking about is if you wanted to try this yourself, you disconnect the negative side of the battery, you pull the mass airflow sensor off, you go buy some mass airflow sensor clean, don't you touch that little bitty pigtail, little pig's tail inside the mass airflow sensor. Don't touch it, don't look at it, don't do anything except just wash it with some mass airflow sensor liquid. Then let it dry. Yeah, let it dry. Let it set it out in the sun for a little while. Don't get your gasoline-powered blower and blow it out, okay? this ain't a cheap part. And we got people with toothbrushes that figure out that if we're going to brush its teeth, we're better off. And, of course, that just ruins it. Gone. So that's what we all agree that that's probably a good step for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
All righty.
Okay, I will definitely do that. And if it doesn't work, I will take it to your shop for a diagnosis.
Okay, good enough. And leave it there so that we can start it cold, whoever the shop is.
Yeah.
You describe exactly what they need to do to get this to happen. And then if you want to, if you have technicians like Eric that can't read, this doesn't work.
He can trace somewhere.
He can trace.
Yeah.
Okay. So you write it down and you copy it and you put one on the dash, you give one to the service writer, and you tape the other to the rearview mirror for the technician that's going to be working on your car. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
It really does help.
It really does.
It helps.
The more information, the better.
Well, and then you talk to the service writer. The service writer talks to his girlfriend, and then he calls his mother and wishes her. And by the time he tells the technician, he's got 47 things on his hard drive, and he's not going to get it right. So to write it down so that the guy working on your car can see that there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Unless, of course, you're illiterate like Eric. Go ahead, Hector.
Well, then I'll have my wife take care of that part.
That's okay, Hector. I like Hector already. I like Hector. All right, thank you very much, Hector. Joe, you're up next. Joe, how can I help you?
My son has a, I think it's either a 99 or 2000 Mitsubishi, the little sports car.
Uh-huh.
And they put like two alternators on, and then you start driving, and all of a sudden you just smoke the alternator.
Okay.
What I'm asking is, I asked you to call because you had Bert on there, and he's close to me.
Uh-huh.
What did it cost for a diagnostic to figure out why it's doing that?
Okay, hold on. We're going to ask Jeff. A diagnostic, he's smoking the alternator. He's got smoke coming from it. So this electrical diagnostic, give me the range, the low side, the high side.
Low side's around $60, and it could go up to about $150, depending how intense we have to get.
Okay, and we're going to be looking at the continuity of all the wires. We're going to be looking at the volts. We're going to be looking how good the ground is. We're going to be doing all of that. Have you got an idea, Kurt or Eric, what would typically cause this, or what in the past has caused this for the alternator to burn up? And got it? Any ideas?
Typically, your main charge wire is somehow shorted to ground. I mean, you're just overloading that alternator.
Okay.
I was thinking that, or I didn't know if it was computer-controlled voltage regulator on some of these. Sometimes the voltage regulator in the computer can give a false signal and max it out.
And what we've seen once was the negative cable was terrible. And so when we lose a negative cable, the voltage drops, and the alternator goes, or the regulator goes, wow, the voltage is zero, and so it winds the alternator up and full fields that son of a gun, and it just wipes it out.
Yeah.
Yep. It doesn't take long. So that's kind of the work that needs to be done. We need to make sure that the voltage wire at the back of the alternator mimics the battery, right? We have to have that. We need a good ground system, and then we're going to have to go through, because something's causing this, and I don't know if it's got an internal regulator in that 99 Mitsubishi or if it's external, but I'm betting it's internal.
That one might be.
So that would be something that might very well do it, but it's a matter of just knowing what the system's supposed to do and making sure that what it's supposed to do is it's doing. And so it's really kind of an issue. There's been times where we've and a lot of people will pull the battery cable to kill the car.
Okay.
And they kill the alternator.
Or computer.
Or the computer, because you all of a sudden you just tangle all everything up. You've got a whole bunch of people that are on the same train, and what you've done is stopped the train, opened up all the doors, and went backwards. And you just got
people are falling off all over the place, aren't they?
Exactly. So in your particular case, I agree with you. I'm thinking to open up the window a little wider from 45 upwards to God knows where. But most of us are going to be able to track that down within about $100 to $150 on the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. So, and then you've got, after that, you've got two things. You got the diagnostic, but then you got the part and the labor to replace the part, unless the customer wants to do it themselves. And then you can obviously give them your diagnosis and move from there.
Yeah, then make sure they put a good white box part in there so we get to diagnose it again.
Yeah. what I think you're saying is that we'd like to see a name on the box.
Yes.
We'd like to see something that we recognize. Yes. You guys want to throw a couple of names out?
Denso.
Hitachi.
Yes.
Bosch.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes. Even to some extent, Motorcraft and Delco and
AC Delco.
I like Delco Motorcraft.
Yeah. So we want to see a name on the box. We don't want them to be ashamed of the where the part came from. But anyway, there you go, Joe. Good luck to you, buddy. Okay. All righty.
One quick question.
Okay.
You guys have any towing companies? I live at 7th Street in Union Hills, basically, and I got to get it to Kirk.
You have a tow truck that?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the name of your tow truck towing service?
So we use Settle Towing.
S-E-T-T-L-E?
Correct.
Okay, Settle Towing. They service Kurtz. Tell them you're a customer, and tell them you want the Eric price, not the Jeff price.
Yeah.
Okay. Or better yet, just tell them it's Kurt's car. and have him join in there. Anyway, thank you very much, Joe. Thank you very much. I did a study not too long ago, and it was because this customer, who really made me mad, wanted to dictate what Ford parts or what parts we put on his Ford. Okay, Ford in the last 5 years for the trucks, they've had Bendix brakes, they have a Johnson control battery, they have a Hitachi and a Denso alternator, starter, mass airflow sensor. Hitachi and Denso. That's where they're accessing that kind of stuff. The brakes are all Bendix. And then I could go on and on and on, but I can't remember half of what I was. But the issue was, is this Ford wasn't made by any Ford parts.
No.
Now, I've been to the Johnson Controls factory, and I want you to picture 100 bowling lanes that are tilted from the back to the front. Okay, they're not flat.
Uh-huh.
And you got the same battery coming down every single one of those lanes with a different tag. But every one of them is a Group 78 or a Group 74 or a Group 3160, whatever. But every one of them has a different tag. Walmart, Price Club, or Costco, or whatever. And just all the way down the line, it's the same battery.
Yeah.
So 89% of the batteries that are sold in the United States are made by one company.
Yeah.
And so that's why I tell people just kind of shop price, because it really doesn't make any difference where you get it. So it's that. But then Bendix brakes. Now, here's the last question. Do you know the difference between the Ford blue box part and the Ford red box part?
The color of the ink?
The color of the ink. That's good. That's good. Well, whippersnappers.
You know what? I don't know off the top of my head, Mark.
Okay.
I know I see the backing plates between good quality pads and bad quality pads make a huge difference.
I agree with you.
But I don't know if that's the difference.
Okay. Eric?
They make two different boxes?
They do make two different boxes. And this is the truth. The blue box, when they built the car in 2014, let's say it's a headlight switch. The blue box has, they tell the manufacturer, whoever it is, of the headlight switch, give me some extras. So they put it in the blue box, and that represents the original part you had.
Hmm.
That's the original part that you had, or some semblance of that. Now, the red box is today's vendor.
Gotcha.
So 6 years ago, we had this thing made, and we got a couple thousand of them. Let's take 10,000. We got some 10,000 extra headlight switches. Well, those go in the blue box for that car, that spread. But now we have a new vendor, and he's making the same switch. He's from Indonesia. The first guy was from Japan or China, okay? So the idea is that the blue box and the red box has to do with pricing. And if you guys remember, have you heard of the new Omni parts?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Omni parts are aftermarket parts that are sold by Motorcraft Motorcraft Omnicraft.
Mm-hmm.
So the Ford dealers are saying now we have a second line called Omnicraft. And the Omnicraft parts are not Motorcraft, but they're good because we've given them our stamp of approval. Okay. The problem with that is the other parts that they sell, the Motorcraft parts, are no different than the parts they got in these Omnicraft. And they're aftermarket parts. And that, but they're trying to capture the ten biggest numbers, and so I'll suggest that they're alternators and starters and mass airflow sensors and spark plugs and all the stuff that we do on a regular basis. Maybe water pumps, maybe starters. But the idea is that for how many years, this is a question, how many years has Ford been telling us that we need to use Motorcraft and Ford parts, and now all of a sudden they have another line that is not, and they're selling it.
Yeah.
They're selling Omnicraft as a second line for as long as I've been around, which is 50 years.
Yeah.
As long as I've been around, Ford has been one of them, but the rest of them say the same thing is, don't buy any parts but ours.
No.
You have to buy Chrysler parts. You have to buy Ford parts. You have to buy General Motors parts. Now all of a sudden we got Ford saying, ah, we were just teasing.
Yeah. As long as you buy from us.
Exactly. As long as you buy from us. But they're really going after us installers on that. 602-508-0960. I want to say it again, 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. It's just too exciting in here for me, you guys. It's just too exciting for me. They're helping me. They say you don't have the mics on, and they say you don't have the computer punched in and all that kind of stuff. And that's okay. I could use all the help I could get. I've only been doing this since 1988, but I'm losing my mind.
Well, we heard you at the beginning of your 10 o'clock, and you really messed up there.
I did. I absolutely did. I admit it. I have no problem with raising my hands and saying, I messed up. And then the second part of it, I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire and Auto Service. They opened in 1976. They have three locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have the most comprehensive lines of tires and sizes of tires and many different brands of tires. So they have anything you want for your personal vehicle and from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between. So you can go in there and say, I'd like good, better, best, a price for four. That's mounted and balanced, sales tax, FET, all the stuff. And I'd like to see the tire. And they can pull that off. So they can balance your tires. They can do your alignments. But the best part is they take off the old ones. They can read the tread and decide if you need to have your suspension or your alignment adjusted. That's kind of nifty. We wish all of us could do that, see the old tires, and then determine what we need to do. So that's S&S Tire, West Side, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Harry, you're up next. How can I help you, Harry?
Yeah, boy, it kind of sounds like Mark and the Harpo Marx brothers.
Yeah. You know what this is? This is a zoo, Harry. This is a zoo.
It would be interesting if you had this televisor stream.
I want to tell you, that's not going to happen, and I'll tell you why it's not going to happen. You have no idea what kind of costume Eric's going to show up in. Today, he's got a red wig, he's got a short dress, he's got high heels on, and that's just not television as far as I'm concerned.
It would not be.
Yes, that's exactly right. So what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I want to kind of give a shout-out to the boys there at Kurtz. I've brought my vehicles to them for quite a while, and they've really taken good care of me and everything. And I just wanted to say that Jeff and the boys and Kurt and Eric really done a nice job on all my vehicles. And also kind of give a shout-out to your S&S tire. I needed my tires rotate and balance, so I took them over the other day, and I says, well, while you're at it, go ahead and check the alignment, because I'd never had it checked on my Honda, and they found it was out and took care of it. And I said, oh, by the way, the right rear tire got banged on a curb. And I can't blame my wife for that, because I did.
I'll go ahead, Mark.
Yeah. Harry?
He hasn't learned anything from you, Mark.
He hasn't. Harry, it's perfectly acceptable. And under those circumstances, it's a lot. Nobody believes that we do anything wrong.
No.
Kiss curbs and stuff like that, hop curbs and stuff like that. But anyway, Harry, thank you very much.
They took good care of me, but the only thing is when I asked for the Mark Salem 50% discount, Jeff over there kind of gave me a a funny look and says, I don't think so.
You know, it's one of those things that I'm trying to work on. But I will tell you this much, Harry. I know you're a customer of Kurt's, and your next oil change is on me. And,
really?
And, yep. And that's good. I'm going to put a window there because last time I said that, I got a bill from Eric here for a 55-gallon drum of oil. And it was synthetic, and it was like $2,000. So I'm going to put a cap on it under $50. Can we work with that?
We got you covered.
Okay, you got me covered.
All right,
thank you, Harry.
Thanks,
Jerry, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hello,
Mark. Hey,
what's happening?
A 2002 Dodge Intrepid.
Okay.
I'm doing a clock spring, and my question is more of a clarification, which may stir up the pot a little bit.
Okay.
I've heard you guys talk, you disconnect the battery, negative cable and the positive cable, touch the two together. Touch the cables together, not the battery terminal.
Okay.
And you discharge the capacitors. And then I've heard you say it that way, then I've heard you say you wait 30, 40 minutes, and then you're good to go. So what's the story? Do I wait or don't I wait?
Eric, go. What do you do when you're doing a clock spring?
You want to know the truth?
Yeah, kind of.
Nothing.
Okay.
I just take it out.
All right, so you're rolling the dice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean... In 18 years, I've never had an airbag explode on me.
Okay. And when you do, it's going to knock your teeth.
It will.
Yeah. You're going to have a flat nose. And here's the worst part. You're going to have a flat nose, and you're going to have a $1,000 bill.
Yeah,
okay?
I will.
All right. Now, if you're going to advise your father-in-law, and I know you love your father-in-law.
So, yes, Eric.
Yeah. Connect the wires together and then pull it.
Yeah.
And the 9-volt battery.
Okay. All right. Let's say it's the preacher in your church.
Oh, okay.
What are you going to advise him?
Disconnect the battery and wait about 30 minutes.
Okay. And I'm with you because I think it's a safety reason. So I think I like to disconnect it and touch the cables together, which discharges the capacitor. And because I'm an airbag collecting guy and I collect the black box data, I'm real into that thing, and we're told to do just exactly that from virtually every car manufacturer. Now, I've never had an airbag deploy when I'm touching the cables together, because we have to have speed in order to have the airbag deployment.
Yeah.
So we have to have a speed that typically is about 10 miles an hour or higher, because we need to lose 15 miles an hour in an instant before we throw the airbag in your face.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to throw an airbag in your face when you're only doing 8 miles an hour, because if you hit a wall at 8 miles an hour, you scrub off 8 miles an hour. But really, I think everybody agrees in my industry that between 12 and 20, we're going to throw the airbag at you. That's instantaneous loss of speed called delta V. So in your particular case, I think you should do both. I think you're best served by doing both. And it's not a good idea to have your wife anywhere around when you're doing that clock spring and that airbag. I don't know if you've ever seen an airbag deploy, but if you go to YouTube and you can say airbag explosion or airbag deployed, there's guys that are sitting on metal trash cans, and inside the trash can, they don't know that there's an airbag. And so they'll sit down, and they're all sitting in the garage yakking and teasing one another, and somebody will deploy that airbag, and it'll launch that guy 6, 7, 8 feet in the air. So you don't want that to happen. Not only does it hurt, but it's going to cost you a lot of money to get another airbag. So let's just do the safe way. Take the cables off. Touch them together. Go do something for 30 minutes and come back. Okay?
Fair enough.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. That's a good question. That's a nice safety question. Have you got a comment, Eric? Because you're laughing behind the scenes. And
I was just looking at Jeff, and I wish you wouldn't give him that idea. He's looking for a garbage can sale now.
Yeah. I want to tell you, we got a bunch of airbags from somebody who had collected them, and we deployed them out in the parking lot. They're bad.
They're bang up.
Oh, they're bad.
Yeah. We shot a few off out in the middle of the parking lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. You know, it's like filling a trash can full of propane and then lighting underneath it, seeing the thing go up and land a mile away. You know, you have to be out at the ranch when we do that. And anyway, thank you very much, Jerry. That was a great question. Charlie, you're up next. How can I help you?
I've got a 99 Subaru. I'm trying to get ready for a granddaughter. And I've talked to a few people, and they said that in Japan they have to take some of these motors out when they reach 50,000 miles, and then they bring them over here to the U.S. and sell them here. Do you know anything about that kind of a story?
Absolutely. It's true.
Okay. Now, He said, so they come with less than 50,000, and this is a 99. I don't know if I'd be able to get a motor to fit that, but it sounds like a reasonable way to go rather than, I think the motor needs extensive work on the internal engine, but I'd kind of like to take a chance on just getting a Japanese motor with less than 50,000.
Well, you can do that, but I got a couple of thoughts. I know what you're saying is true because I don't know if you guys have ever seen those little Mitsubishi trucks with right-hand drive.
Mm-hmm.
I got one out in the shop. We just lifted it, put some big tires on it. It's a four-wheel drive. It's got a 650cc engine in it, and they all come across the pond with about 40K. 40, what, isn't that it's not miles, it's something else.
It's kilometers.
Kilometers, thank you. So, yes, that's the answer, but let me ask you about the Subaru. Is it overheating, or is it using oil, and what's the matter with it right now?
I think it's got something either wrong with the head or a head gasket. We're losing water.
Okay.
And getting a little white smoke, that sort of thing, and then, of course, the water, I know the water's leaving.
Okay. Jeff, have you guys got any sealer that you've used before that really works good?
So we've played with the K-Seal a little bit.
Okay.
It seems to work fair, at least.
And we've had real good success with it. The orange bottle, the K-Seal. Mm-hmm. If you follow the directions, which guys don't do a very good job at, but if you follow the directions, we've had a Suzuki Samurai that as fast as we poured in water, it came out the tailpipe. And so when we took the head off the hole, you could have driven a Subaru through the hole. So that didn't work. But Eddie, who drives 50 miles to work every day and 50 miles back, he's 3.5 years on his Lexus with K-Seal. So that's worked really well for us. Here's my problem that I've got with your situation, Charlie. You're going to give a young lady a Subaru who can't take an overheat in any way, shape, or form.
No.
And
true.
And you're going to give her a car, and there's a good chance in the first year of her driving that she's going to make some bad decisions. And I think it's a bad decision for you to start looking for a motor for that Subaru. I think you ought to just get the head. I think you ought to try some K-Seal. You got nothing to lose. I think our charge is $125, which includes flushing the system and doing it exactly like it says and putting the K-Seal in and then going and drive it and all that kind of stuff. It's about $125. Some guys are – I think the range is $125 to $175. I think the chance, Jeff, or Eric or Jeff, both of you, what's the percentage of chance? If you've only had one, how many, have you had one that it didn't work on, or did you have more?
You know, we've only tried it a few handful of times. So far, it's worked every time we've tried it.
Okay, and we're one out of, I bet, 100. We're one out of 100, a Suzuki Samurai, but it had a huge leak. So I think that's what you should do. I think you should have a good used car check over. I think we should make sure the safety belts are on, and you need to show her where the temperature gauge is. You need to show her where the red zone is. You need to show her the oil as well, and make sure she understands that you're going to hold her to that fashion, because she's going to have to understand the ramifications. A tow bill is always cheaper than the last 3 miles at home with the temperature gauge in the red.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yes. Okay.
And so.
That's great advice. I thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Charlie. Let me tell you about another really great shop in town, and that's up on the north side of town, and that's Strictly Diesel. Strictly Diesel works on diesel. They work on foreign and domestic light diesels. They're located at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. But I like them because they know Chevys and Fords and Chryslers. Now, we all work on Fords a lot, especially on the diesel side, that 6-liter. But the 6.4 and the 6.7 on the Ford side has turned out to be a doggone good motor. The 6.7 on the Dodge and the 6.6 Duramax, those are all good motors, but they work on all of them, and they can do just about anything. So if you have a diesel and you're struggling with a diesel issue, then may I suggest Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and we'll be back in a minute. Okay, welcome back, everybody. It's 20 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We've got Kurt Rock from Kurt's Automotive. We've got Eric, who he checked out of a mental health area. And then we've got Jeff. And Eric is the technician, and he's a master tech. He's the one that actually, he's the mule that you two guys ride. Because you make money while he works. Isn't that true?
Mule, huh?
Yeah, mule. Or a derivative of. And so Jeff's on my right. He's the service manager, the service writer. He's typically going to be one of the people you talk to when you call in. Mm-hmm. And Eric runs the shop, and he takes the hard cart and fixes them. And Kurt does, help me out here.
Yeah, he rides a gravy train.
All righty. So we're going to go, real quick, let me talk about Action Auto, which is just down the street from you guys.
Tom.
Tom at Action Auto is at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a full-serve family-owned operation. He's been in the Deer Valley area and serving Deer Valley and North Phoenix since 1983. Him and his staff have good quality workmanship skills, good customer service, fast turnaround time. They also have ASE Master Techs, and that means a lot to us. And the reason why is those guys have demonstrated their proficiency and been tested, and they have to do it every 5 years. And frankly, more than 80% of the people that apply for a job with me don't have any ASE certifications. And so that's kind of like asking somebody to be your doctor and they've never been to a doctor school. But anyway, ASE Masters at Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. It's a good guy, and his name is Tom. Let's go to the phones. And Kirk, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I got a 96 4Runner. Replaced the shock, the rear shock and the rear coil spring multiple times, but they don't last for more than a few months. What am I doing wrong?
Well, tell us how you know they don't last for a couple months. What are the symptoms that you're trying to fix that you've not been able to fix?
I bought them out. They ride nice for a few months, and then, I start to notice it, and then 6 months later, I'm really feeling the bump over the speed bump.
We're all here scratching our heads because
you towing anything with this thing? Do you carry a lot of extra weight on the back?
I had a bunch of extra weight at one time, a few times at least, where I would have made sense. I could have blown out the shock. But no, when I put in, after I put in the new stuff, it's right back to the same thing.
Okay. I'm going to step out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that, we're all in amazement. Can I speak for all of us?
Yeah.
We've never done what you've done, and between all of us here, we've seen 500,000 cars. So it doesn't make any sense that you're wearing out brand-new springs, and it doesn't make any sense that you're wearing out brand-new shocks. That just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that you're doing it over and over again. I think you've got a noise in the back that he's interpreting as a bottoming out. I think he's got lower control arm bushing problems. He's got some kind of a problem in the back end that he's misinterpreting as a shock or bottoming out kind of situation. I think you should take a measurement from that rear bumper, and then as this noise comes back, if the rear bumper doesn't change and the measurement is off the ground, then the springs haven't collapsed.
No.
Yeah. Unless we have too long of a shock in there, Mark.
Well, that wouldn't that blow the oil out of it, though?
It can.
It should.
But it can also feel like you're bottoming out.
And if he has the wrong shocks, but when you order them, Kirk, are you ordering by application or are you taking the numbers off the shocks? How are you doing that?
I'm going to the local parts shop.
And so you're giving him the application. You're saying, I have a 1996 4Runner, and I need rear shocks.
Yep.
Okay. Is it a factory rear suspension? Is there any blocks, or has anybody lifted it or lowered it or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Because there's three answers to my questions. Yes, no, and I don't know. And so, I just want to throw that out there because I don't know is a thing. You've got us all stumped. We have no idea why you have what you have. We haven't experienced it, and I think I speak for all of us. Mm-hmm. There's just no way if he's buying quality parts that he's wearing out a set of springs or a set of shocks.
Correct.
And we're on a second set, and we still have the same problem.
Yeah, the only thing I was thinking is if he's done the same brand over and over again, maybe it's time for a brand change.
But he's on his third set.
I know. I
think we just need a fresh pair of eyes.
Yeah.
I think we just need to. I mean, what happens if he's got a muffler bracket broken or a hanger or something like that? What happens if he's got a bushing out of the rear suspension somewhere, and we're actually knocking when we move forward or move backward or whatever. I mean, there's just so many things that it can be. I just think you should have somebody look at it and look over your shoulder. I think that the cost associated with that, with a test drive and some rack time, somewhere between $50 and $100. Fair enough, guys.
Yeah. Yes.
You think that's the range?
Yeah.
And I, especially if you can duplicate it. Now, I don't know about a lot of shops, but you have the transmitters that you can put underneath the car and listen with headsets. Mm-hmm. So that we put magnetic sensors all over the back of that thing, and then one guy drives and the other guy has the funky headphones on, and we listen to see. And number one is far away, number two is far away, number three is close, and number four is right on top of the problem. So it's that kind of a situation. But that takes two guys, and it's going to take some time. So all of a sudden, we've gone past that $50 to $100 range.
Yeah, and if you can get it to make the noise or duplicate it, you can always have the short, fat little guy jump up and down on the back of it and try and bottom it out.
Yeah, that's what Eric's good for. Yeah. I mean,
I'm not short.
No, I was going to give that to you. I was going to give
that. So it's touchy, Mark.
It's the little... but if you have a couple of lightweight 100-pound technicians, just put two of them on the rear bumper and jump up and down. So Eric likes to get underneath it and watch what's going while maybe you and Kurt are on the rear bumper.
That might hurt.
But
it squishes.
Yeah, but the fun part is if it comes in a little muddy, then he's underneath the truck. A couple of hammer hits on the outside of it, and it covers him with dust. But anyway, Kurt, you got us stumped, and that's the best we can offer you. Robert, you're up next. Robert, how can I help you?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a 1992 Nissan pickup, and the engine heat indicator stopped working.
Okay.
Is that a major repair?
No, I would think that the wire has come off the sender or the sender's defective.
Or the instrument cluster had a bulb burnout on it. It's a 92, he said. So.
Yeah. Is this something you can see in the day but you can't see at night?
Oh, I can. No, it doesn't work anytime.
Okay.
It's a gauge,
yeah,
right?
It's
is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a gauge.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got a needle within a gauge, and the needle no longer moves. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. I'm thinking on the rough side of this, depending on access to the temperature sender. Here's how it is. We're going to find the temperature sender. Eric's going to be inside with the key on. Jeff's going to be on the outside of the car. He's going to take the wire off the temperature sender and ground it. And when he grounds it, the gauge is going to go crazy. Well, now we know the gauge works and we know the sender's bad. So then they're going to go to parts, order that. They're going to drain a little coolant out of it. They're going to put a new sensor and attach the wire, and we're done. So I'm thinking somewhere between $75 and $150, not knowing what that sensor is going to cause. So I think that's the answer. I think you take it in, and I think on a 1 to 10 scale, guys, with 10 being the very most difficult job we do, what is this one?
A 2 to 3.
A 2. Yeah, I'm a 2.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Anyway, Robert, that's what we think you should do. What part of town do you live in?
Scottsdale, South Camelback and Pima.
Okay. There is a really good shop at 8700 McDowell Road, and it's a guy that's been around a very, very long time. It's called Bell Auto Service, 87th and McDowell. And Craig is a very good technician. His wife runs the front counter, and I promise you he can fix this.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you very much. All righty, we're going to take a break, but Matt, you stay right there because you're next. And we've got four open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. Kurt Rock from Kurt's Automotive, Eric. And Eric is the shop guy. He's the master tech. All of them. Everybody in this room is a master tech, including me.
Yeah.
So Eric runs the shop, and then Jeff runs the front counter and the customers and the work orders and all that stuff and the parts. Have I got it right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, good enough. Let's go. And Matt, thank you for waiting as long as you did. How can I help you?
Well, good. It sounds like I got a good panel to try to stump.
Yeah.
96 Ram 1500, 5.9 liter. And it will not accelerate beyond 3,000 RPM. It just flat falls on its face.
I thought he was going to stump us.
Yeah, yeah. Why did you throw that softball at us? Okay, Mr. Eric, go ahead and tell us.
He plugged his cats.
Okay. And here's how you do that. This is what I would do. Are you a handy kind of guy yourself?
Considerable.
Okay. Well, I would get underneath with the quarter-inch drill bit, and in front of the catalytic converter by about 10 or 12 inches, mm-hmm. I'm going to drill a quarter-inch or less half hole, and then I'd go behind the catalytic converter 10 or 12 inches, and I'd drill another hole. And then this is what we do. You go drive the thing until it runs out of power. You bring it back in. Now, the front hole that goes from the engine to the front of the cat, at idle, it's going to be blowing air out like a tornado. And in the back hole, after the catalytic converter, it's going to be hardly enough to wipe out a match. Now, we all know what to do to drive it, and I'll bet it's a little better when it's cold, and after it warms up, it gets really bad?
No.
It's all the time.
Actually, I can start it and immediately go full throttle, and it's 2,800, 3,000, and that's it.
Okay. Yeah. If that's the case, then you have your wife get in there. And, no, listen. Hear me out.
It's Mother's Day, Mark. Be nice.
No, I'm not going
to. Oh, okay.
You guys are jumping the gun.
We know you too well.
Have someone help you and get in there and hold the RPMs up about 2,000 RPM. Take a gloved hand and put it about 8 inches away from the tailpipe. If that thing won't blow out a candle, we're already done.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We're looking for air volume now. If you want to compare, go to your wife's car, run it up to 2,000 RPM, and put your hand, a gloved hand, about 10 or 12 inches behind the tailpipe. I don't care if it's a Nissan Sentra. It's going to be a volume of air that's going to be different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the bad news is you're talking probably $500, $600, $700 worth of work here if you're right. Now, you better figure out what caused the cats to melt down. You can't just put two new cats on there without going back and finding out what the CO and the HC is and whether our oxygen sensors are talking to one another and all that other kind of stuff. So this could easily be $1,000 worth of work because you have to find the cause, and then you verify the effect. And where you're looking at the symptoms, and then you're going to verify the symptoms, then you're going to look at the effect, then you're going to diagnose it, then you're going to fix it, then you better go back to the beginning and verify everything is back the way it should be. So
they're probably the original cats. If that's the case, it's got 250,000 miles on it.
Oh,
is he burning any oil? Because those were oil burners. Yeah. Do you get any?
No, not really. You know, I've done the plenum plate on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And haven't had any issues there.
Well, I'm glad you told us the 200. I think we're all far more comfortable with the idea that you smoked both of the cats. Nothing you could do.
Yeah.
We could give Eric $1 million and tell him to go smoke the cats on a 5.9 Dodge, and chances are you couldn't do it unless you artificially inseminated something like oil and just soaked them or made it run rich. So that's what I'm talking about. We need to look to see if it's running rich, if the O2 sensors, because if the O2 sensors die, then the computer turns the faucet wide open. And that creates a lot of problems. That's what wipes out cats. That's one of the many reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You with me?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, the tailpipe is not sooty or anything like that.
We wouldn't expect it to be if the cats are plugged up. But anyway, we're all concerned. We're all convinced that you have a catalytic converter problem. Okay?
Yeah. I'll give it a shot.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Sue, you're up next. Sue, how can we help you?
Hi there. My question is about purchasing a used car that has been in a rental fleet. I currently drive a 2000 Toyota Sienna that I bought brand new, and she's got about 303 on her, so it's time to upgrade. And it's a lot cheaper for the vans that were on, you know, the Hertz or whoever were rental vehicles. Anything bad about a rental vehicle?
Okay, have you guys got any rental vehicle facilities around you that you know people have bought and have been terribly happy or terribly sad?
No,
I'm talking to the three.
Yeah. I bought my wife a 16 Town and Country a year ago. Uh-huh. It was a year old, had 30,000 miles on it, and I'm pretty sure it was out of a rental fleet. Okay. And I don't feel bad about rentals because they're going to change the oil, they're going to service them. Mm-hmm. And if you buy a 30,000 or 20,000 mile rental car, it's been taken care of. If you buy a 20,000 mile car from a private individual, it may never had an oil change,
or it may have been driven by the granddaughter or the grandson.
Yeah,
and grandma and grandpa had little to do with it. Yeah. The answer to your question, I'll tell you, I have had really good luck with Enterprise.
Yeah.
Enterprise will give you the maintenance records. Enterprise will let you take it anywhere you want and have it checked out. And when people bring us an Enterprise car, we I don't know what your charge is, but I think we're at 100, 110 on a used car checkover. Are you guys close to that?
Yeah, pretty close.
Okay. I don't even do them on the Enterprise cars. First of all, they're 30, 40,000, yeah. 50,000 mile yeah. cars. Number two, I already know that they maintain the heck out of them. I know the brakes are not bad. I know the tires are good. I know all that stuff. So we're just telling people, we'll do it if you want, but in reality, chances of us finding something are pretty doggone slim. Now, I can't speak to the rest of them because there's an Enterprise lot about a half a mile from the shop, and we do get a lot of business from them. But the idea, and I'm not doing this because we get business from them. I'm just telling you, I really like their cars, and I recommend people for a used car that want a newer model car to go to Enterprise. So, Sue, I would say the same thing to you.
Okay, that makes it easy. Plus, even the bonus, they're usually cheaper than from a private party.
Well, in a whole bunch of ways. And I think buying a car that's got 2 or 3 years on it before they cycle it out, I think they take really good care of them, and I think that maintenance is not an issue. But you should ask for the maintenance records for this reason. At least you know what's due next.
Right.
And you don't duplicate what they may have already done. Anyway, thank you very much, Sue. Thank you very much. That's a good question. I haven't had that question in a long time. Dan, you're up next. How can I help you?
We have a break.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Everybody's pointing towards the screen, and I know the clock says 40, but it's a soft break, you guys. And so soft means Mark can take it whenever the heck he wants to take it.
And he wants to take it now.
And Gil said to take it now. Yeah. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. AutoDynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive service. I've known Chuck Nide, who owns AutoDynamics, since 1968. It's a family-owned and operated shop. They're proud to have high quality and good service people, and they stand behind their work no matter what they do to your car. They're not paid a commission. None of the staff or the mechanics are paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill, so therefore they're not likely to sell you unnecessary parts and repairs. So if you're looking for a good shop in the Sun City area, I'd like to recommend Automotive Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Dan, thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Yeah, Mark, my concern is a 12 Tacoma. I have a recirculating for my air conditioning. When I put it on, I opened up, I took out my internal filter, and it's clapping, you know, when I had the AC on.
Yeah.
It was supposed to shut, closed it off.
Yeah.
I put it on internal circulation.
Right.
And then when we'll have it on, I can see it clapping there, it's making noise.
You can see it or hear it?
Well, I actually took out the cabin filter, and I can see it in there making clapping up and down.
Well, are you telling jokes when you're driving and the thing is clapping for your thing, or are you putting the moves on some girl, or is there?
I don't know what it is. It doesn't do it.
Okay.
But I can see it in there today.
Eric knows how to fix this. Go ahead.
He's got a gear broken on the motor that moves that door.
Okay.
I thought it was a gear.
Yep, it's a little plastic gear. The gear's like 27 cents. The labor's $250. Don't worry about it.
That's what I was thinking, not to worry about it.
You know, you can do anything you want. You can go in there and just grab a hold of that and put a piece of duct tape on it and put it wherever the heck you want to do it, because it's not going to make any difference if the gearbox is stripped. Right?
Keep it closed.
You can keep it closed or open. If you're going to go out of recirc to normal, then you have to drop a window a little bit, because we can't blow air into the cab and not have, you know, the air to go someplace. So if you drop the windows down, the hot air rises. It's simple science. Mm-hmm. Air goes out. So if you're going to keep it in recirc, the bad part about recirc is we're pulling the air off the passenger side floorboard. You got that?
But I don't have any stinky socks down there, so...
He knew where I was going.
here's the other problem, Mark.
Okay.
If he ever goes up north on recirc,
yeah.
It doesn't work on the defrosters very well.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
I
right.
know that. Yeah, that because when you put it on defroster, it kicks it out of recirculation.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and do you have any idea on the labor side of this?
We'd have
to look it up. Yeah, we just don't know. I imagine it's going to be some dashboard disassembly.
Yeah. Okay. Usually, most of them are minimum of $200-$250, but you can do some that depends how it's buried. You're talking $800-$900.
Okay,
in labor.
Now, is it going to be an entire assembly with the door? Are we going to replace the door and the gearbox?
That's usually how Chrysler does it, but that's not. Most everybody else does just the motor for $50-$60,
okay.
Whatever they are.
Okay.
It does a whole motor. You can't just change the gear.
Okay. So that's what you've got. So you can either live with it, or you're rolling the dice for between $200 on the low side and $700 or $800, depends. Now, doesn't it bother you when he has a Jeep apart and the front seats are out of it, the dash from left to right, from passenger side to door, is sitting on the thing, and he's got a 5-gallon bucket of bolts? You're praying that he's not going to die, aren't you? Aren't you?
You know, Eric actually puts them together right almost every time.
Almost every. Well, I would just go crazy if I walked over there and he says, I'm done, and there's 2 bolts left in that thing. Now, there's been times I've dropped a couple of bolts in those things just to see if they'll. But I don't want him to. You know, I got to tell him that those 2 bolts don't belong to your car, and I'm just messing with you. But it is scary.
Yep.
You have to admit it's scary.
It's pretty intimidating.
Kurt, you look at these guys, and they got the dash out, the front seats out, the carpets out. I mean, the dashboard we're talking from door to door is sitting outside.
Yeah, consoles in the bed of the truck.
Exactly. That's a scary thing.
Yeah.
That's a scary thing. You hope that technician has a long life because, you know, if this is a 2-day job, if his wife shoots him the next day, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
She's in big trouble, but you're in big trouble.
Well, she'll have to put it together.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so we got a recirc door clapping. I haven't heard clapping. You know, flapping we hear, but clapping. That's okay,
or taking.
Sounds like a machine gun under the dash.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, you're up next. How can we help you, Jim?
Jim, drop. Let's go to Brian.
Brian, you're up next. How are you? What can we do for you?
Thanks, fellas. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I have an 04 Accent, and the problem with the air conditioner is I have to leave it in idle for 2 or 3 minutes before the AC will actually kick in.
Okay.
And it makes this, if I get in and I start driving it, 8 or 9 minutes, it won't go on until maybe I'm at a stop or idling, and then the engine makes a throttling noise, the AC kicks in, and then it blows super cold.
Okay. Well, I'll take you guys can follow up. It's going to have a low pressure or high pressure switch on it.
Yep.
And it's going to have a coil, and we're going to run the power through the low pressure and high pressure switch, and then we're going to run it to the coil. So you got 3 areas of concern, right?
Right.
So we have to, I mean, the easiest thing to do if you want to work with us on this is bring it in and we'll bypass 1 switch at a time and see if it makes any difference. So bypass the high pressure switch for just testing purposes, and then we plug it back in, we bypass the low pressure switch for testing purposes, and then do you guys use those U-Haul light assemblies, those big long 20-foot cords with the double filament light on them? We use those all the time. We plug them in, and they got a power and a ground to them. We plug them in, and we leave them on the dashboard or on the console with the car, and when he turns on the clutch, the light doesn't come on.
Huh.
So then, after a while, the light comes on. So we know that we have the electrical supply to it, and we got power in the ground, but we know that the interruption is the power side of the circuit.
Gotcha.
So then you can go on the other side, and you can just scotch lock that to the low pressure switch on the output side or on the input side, and you can diagnose it, and you're using them to do it. It's going to take 2 or 3 days to figure it out, but it's cheaper than you know, having us start ripping it apart. But the idea is that's what you've got going. You've either got a bad coil, bad clutch, and we would replace on a 2012, we'd probably want to replace the compressor, but you could just do the nose. Yeah, it's an 04 Accent. We're going to do the compressor on the 04 Accent.
Yeah.
So we do a complete compressor, which gives you a new compressor as well as a clutch and a hub and an idler. And then that would be it. But this could be a big one, but it's not likely. I'm betting it's going to be some kind of a switch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And especially he says it blows ice cold after it comes on. So it doesn't sound like a Freon problem. It sounds like just some kind of a bad connection or a bad switch. All righty.
If that were the case, what's a ballpark on fixing that?
On the switch, I'm thinking the switch is going to be 50 plus or minus. And depends on where the switch is at. Now, if the switch is at the back of the compressor, the high-pressure switch is at the back of the compressor, we got to suck the Freon out, save it, and put it back in. That's going to add another $125 to your bill. If it's up on the accumulator side, they usually have a Schrader valve on them, so we can unscrew them real fast and put the new one on real fast and get it on good. But I think on the low side, you're probably, if we find a bad connection or a bad plug and we put two new spade connectors in the boot, you're probably talking about $100 on the low side, and you're probably, depending on where it's at, could be $250, $300 on the high side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just a matter of tracking it down. A lot of that's going to be labor, just us finding out what it is. And if it starts working, then we have to set it aside for a couple hours and then come back to it.
Yeah.
So, all righty.
Understandable. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. Okay, Gil. What
do
you want?
Larry is your next caller, Larry.
Larry, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, guys. 2013 F-250 diesel.
I'm sorry.
it's not mine.
Okay.
It's got just a little over 100,000 miles. It had the 100,000-mile service done at the dealer, 10,000 miles ago probably.
Okay.
A light just came on the dash.
Okay.
It said, check coolant additive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Temperature didn't get hot. The light was on for, 2-3 minutes, and then went back out.
Okay.
What the heck is coolant additive?
Well, they want you to add a special coolant to your diesel cooling system, and that's typically a timed issue. So it's so many miles or it's so many hours of operation or something like that. Now, Eric has that coolant additive for $4,620, but my shop has it pretty cheap. It's like $20.
You know, Mark, if he could, we'd send him on a vacation if he did.
Yeah, no. I know. All right, so go ahead. Either one of you.
Yeah. It's just a pure maintenance light. It's okay. Just like, yours that pops on, service light.
Yeah.
You got to change that filter under your valve cover. It comes on every 50, 60,000, whatever.
Yep.
Same thing. So it's just it's a pure maintenance light.
And there is an additive that you can buy and just pour in there, and then you're going to have to reset the light, and it's in your owner's manual how to reset the light. There's a lot of cowboy buddies of mine that aren't going to do anything, and Jeff, you're shaking your head.
Yeah.
I mean, are you going to do it?
No, I would. So
at least you check the condition.
Okay. We're going to check it. I think Ford says you do the revitalizer one time. The next time it comes on, you're supposed to service the cooling system.
Okay, flush and start all over
again.
Have you seen any downside of that other than the sales opportunities that are created by the light? Have you ever seen a Ford come in blowing up or the radiator all corroded or the engine corroded?
I personally have not.
Okay, and neither have I. So that is something that Ford's come out with. Does General Motors or Dodge have anything like that at all? Any kind of warning light that's
Dodge has their water pumps that go out of it every 30,000, so they make sure mandatory cooling system service.
Who is this guy?
I've got one. I know.
I have. I got 80,000 on my Dodge diesel, and I haven't had a water pump.
There's a recall for it.
There's a recall on it, Mark.
A recall on a 12?
Yeah.
Is it
14? I think. No.
I got a recall. I'm ready to roll 100,000 this next month, and I've never had a water pump problem. No. I got a recall for it.
Okay. I do have a recall. I did have a recall, you guys, and I called the dealer and I said, "Can I get in?" He goes, "We don't have the parts."
That's what they told me to.
Yeah.
I said, "Should I bring it in for my trip?" He says, "It won't do us no good. We ain't got the parts."
What kind of, using that philosophy, you guys, we'll just send people their oil change cards every day.
Yeah.
And
just
say, oh, you're due. Whenever.
We'll get oil someday.
Yeah. So bring it on in, but you're due. I mean, come on.
It's ridiculous.
Don't give me it's not a safety issue. Your water pump's not a safety issue.
That's why it's recalled, though, because something causes potential underhood fire. That's why they recall them. It's under a recall.
Okay.
I don't know how they justify it, but that's
okay.
It's there.
Well, is coolant not explosive but flammable?
Yes.
Yes, it is. It's because ethylene glycol in it. It's got alcohol in it.
One day
it is flammable.
Eric was driving a Ford diesel, and the radiator hose popped on him, and he had a runaway on the freeway for a little bit until he burned all the fuel.
Sure. Now, how many times have you guys seen a fire that's caused by an antifreeze leak?
I've never seen it.
Neither have I. How many years you got in this business?
This is my 20th year, almost exactly.
You? 18.
Okay, so that's 38. What are you? 50?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm 50. Yeah. So we got 138 years of experience sitting here, and none of us have seen this fire associated with this thing.
Yeah. Only that one runaway is the only time we've ever seen anything like that.
Anyway, all right, Larry, you got a couple of different choices. You can reset the light and move on, or you can have the additive installed. But I bet at 100,000 miles, it's probably time for a coolant change. Yeah.
Well, he just said they did the 100K, but I don't know if that was included in that service or not, and they just didn't reset it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Larry, you need to ask them, whoever just did the 100K, because they could have done the service, but they forgot to reset your light.
Yeah.
So that's something we should tell you to do. Thank you very much, Larry. Okay, what's your email address if people want to ask you questions?
mycar@mycarhertz.com.
Okay, so it's mycar, all one word, at mycarhertz, H-U-R-T-S.
.com.
Okay, and is it Eric at mycarhertz.com?
There is that one, too.
There is that one, too.
There's it.
I don't advertise that one.
Oh, you don't? Oh, well, then Mark forget
just,
I said
Mark just did.
Yeah, please send all your complaints there.
Eric at mycarhertz.com. All right, you guys. I thank you for coming. You made my day. The girls are going to go have their toenails buffed and their massages and their fingernails and their toenails and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to Jack in the Box, and I'm going to go and hang out with the horses for a while. But anyway, Thompson's Auto Repair is a good shop. He's in Mesa. He's the only shop in Mesa that I recommend. He's on Main Street and Stapley, just east. He's been around a long time. He comes from a family that's been in the Mesa area for probably 50 years. And Brian and Thelma are really, really good people. You only need to meet them to understand why they're on my list. They are the kind of people. They're both married, but Brian's the kind of guy you hope your daughter brings home, and Thelma's the kind of lady that you hope your son brings home. And that's exactly what Brian and Thelma are like. Thank you. God bless you. Wear your seatbelt, and I'll see you next Saturday here at 10.